Everyone, to our Evaluating Risk Management Options for Idaho Barley Producers webinar. This webinar is being sponsored by the Idaho Barley Commission. It's one in a series of webinars we've offered this winter for producer education. For more information and links to these recorded webinars, we invite you to visit our website at www.barley.idaho.gov. So this evening's webinar is being presented by Dr. Jay Parsons, who's a risk management specialist at Colorado State University. Jay is also president and founder of Optimal Ag Consulting, Inc., based in Fort Collins, Colorado. He is the co-author and collaborator on Risk Navigator Strategic Risk Management Project, which is the subject of this evening's webinar. And he is a member of the Right Risk Education team that was formed in 2002 by a coalition of agricultural economic researchers and extension specialists from 8 western states, including Idaho. Colorado and Wyoming took the lead on that project, and we're very pleased that we've been able to bring Jay to Idaho on at least 2 or 3 other occasions to help us better educate our producers on evaluating risk management options. So I welcome Jay Parsons.
Thank you, Kelly, and thank all of you out there for your attention today. Whether you're attending this webinar live or viewing it later as a recording, I do appreciate your interest in this presentation. We are going to talk about evaluating risk management options for Idaho barley producers. I would like to start by inviting all of you to put yourself in the mode of a decision maker. And by that, I mean that that's how I'm going to address you this evening. A lot more prescriptive mode than perhaps a descriptive mode that some of you may have seen in the past. By that, I mean, what I'm not going to do is be pulling up, 10, 5, 15 years worth of data, whatever it might be, and tell you things like, well, according to past history, these are the things that you should be doing. Rather than do that, I'm going to be a lot more conceptual in my approach, and we're going to talk about some concepts that hopefully will help you make better decisions moving forward into the future as you make risk management decisions on your operation. So my goal is to provide you with a foundation from which you feel a lot more comfortable, a lot more at ease with yourself in terms of evaluating these risk management options and what it is that you're trying to accomplish, and probably just as important, how good a job you are doing accomplishing that. As Kelly mentioned, I'm a member of the Right Risk Education Group and have had the pleasure of the last 12 years of traveling throughout the country to do risk management programs, including several of them in Idaho and with Idaho barley producers. And as a part of that, it's become apparent to me that it's very important with an audience and with decision makers to talk first of all about establishing some basic risk management decision strategies so that they can recognize when they are employing those and what it is that they are focusing on as they use those, so that they can recognize the proper time to use them. So we're going to start off with that, and then I'll move into using some of our risk simulation tools that we have, and specifically a Mountain View Farm simulation scenario that we developed for Idaho, and we'll talk about that in the context of using some of those strategies. And then we'll get a little bit more detailed in terms of the specifics of Idaho barley producers and insurance decisions that they could be making at this time of year for the upcoming year, as far as in which products to purchase and to put in place and what those products could do for them and how to evaluate what they're paying for there. So let's go ahead and get started here with a look at some basic risk management strategies, and I'm going to walk through these fairly completely, and we'll revisit them in the context of some applied stuff here in a moment. So let's start with the main one that people tend to use a lot, and that is to maximize expected value. So you got to picture yourself here as a producer with a lot of different uncertainties out there and a lot of different outcomes that can occur, and in theory, at least some specific probabilities attached to those. Now, you might not know those probabilities exactly, but in a lot of cases, we can take some pretty good general guesses at them. If you're employing a strategy that's called maximize expected value, or some people will say maximize the mean or the average, you're taking more of a long-term view of things in general, and you're looking at over the long haul, if I make this decision this way, I'll have the highest average outcome of all the other different strategies I might employ. A lot of people view this as doing risk management. I am kind of a cynic in that regard. I view it as just doing statistics, or if you want to be really cynical, just mathematics, because it's taking a whole bunch of information that's captured in that distribution of outcomes. Good outcomes, say high income outcomes, high yields, high prices, those types of things that perhaps occur at a very low probability. Or on the other end of the spectrum, very low outcomes, bad outcomes, whether it be bad yields or bad prices, and then a whole bunch of stuff in between. And you got a lot of information there, a lot of numbers floating around in terms of yields and dollars and ultimately income, and then a lot of probabilities attached to them. And essentially, you're capturing all of those into one number, and then you're making decisions based off of that one number. And so I personally don't like that because I think it hides a lot of information. But it's something that a lot of people do. They just look at averages and say, you know, on average, this is the best decision I can make. But that's one strategy. Okay, so recognize when that's there. Recognize when you are using it. And the piece of advice I would give to you is that when you have a very wide set of outcomes and probabilities attached to those, you want to make use of that information, and capturing it all into one average and expected value can sometimes be very dangerous and leave you out of business, because on average it can look okay, but you could have several bad outcomes that could put you out of business if you aren't careful and you don't protect against them. So moving along, we could also look at what's called a very optimistic approach, and that is a maxi-max strategy. And this males tend to do this more so than females, and that is we tend to focus on the best outcome possible, and we go for the gusto, if you will. Okay, so that's a very optimistic approach. The bad part about that is a lot of times we ignore the probability of actually achieving that maximum outcome. So you might pour on the fertilizer in a cropping situation, pour on the fertilizer, put a lot of seeds in the ground, a lot of inputs in there, and look at the hope that they have ideal growing conditions, and all that comes to pass as a very good decision. So that's kind of one extreme on the optimistic side. And another extreme on the negative side is called the maxi-min. And in that case, you're focusing on the worst possible outcome. And so the idea is that you want to make the worst possible outcome as good as possible. So you try to eliminate any decisions that you could make that bring about really bad outcomes, and focus on making decisions that basically keep your bottom covered to some degree. And this is a very risk-averse approach to decision-making. So it's the total opposite of a maxi-max type of strategy. And a person employing this type of strategy might really max out their insurance, for example, and they might take a very conservative approach to investments and things like that. Some more sophisticated approaches, a little more detailed approaches, is minimize variation is one of those, and sometimes people use this as minimize the standard deviation. If you aren't familiar with those terms, variation and standard deviation are measuring the spread of the outcomes that can happen. And so in this case, you're trying to stabilize those outcomes as much as possible. So a person that's perhaps planting some fairly risky crops, along with some fairly stable producing crops with stable prices attached to them, or maybe even a livestock operation, you know, they might be looking to minimize the variation in their total outcome, in which case they may move away from those more high-risk enterprises. So they're trying to stabilize their income or stabilize their outcomes around a fairly tight window, if you will, so that they can rely upon it over the long term. Again, you know, a lot of these, none of these decision strategies, if you will, are foolproof. And of course, the problem with that one is you could be minimizing variation around a very conservative number in terms of the positive effects of the outcome. So I like to, rather than just focus on the variation or bullet point number one, focus on the maximum expected value, I like to use something that's characterized as minimize the relative variation. And one of these measures is what's called a coefficient of variation. And that's essentially what you do is you look at the spread or the variation as a ratio of that expected value. So there's two ways you can make this really good, or in this case, minimize it, make it really small. And that is to work on minimizing variation or stabilizing your income. And then because you're dividing by the maximum expected value, the other way to make this minimized variation, relative variation as small as possible is to increase your average income. So you're actually tugging at both ends of that spectrum. So this gets away from the danger of actually minimizing variation to the detriment of making money, for example, because that would show up in this relative measure. And we'll talk about these again in context as we look at the Mountain View Farm scenario here in a moment. Okay, now all of those first five bullet points are nice, and they've been around for some time. And as you can gather from me talking about them, they tend to be very statistical in nature. The last two here I'm going to talk about actually have a lot of practical applications, and people employ them without even realizing that they are employing them. And this comes from years of experience of doing workshops and giving people sets of outcomes and sets of probabilities and a situation to make decisions in, and then asking them to make that decision and then asking them to explain it. And a lot of times these last two come to the forefront in terms of an explanation of how they make decisions. And safety first is the first one we'll talk about. And safety first can be characterized as covering some sort of minimum level, acceptable level of outcome first, and then employing one of these other five decision rules, usually maximize expected value, to decide among those alternatives that at least cover your safety first criteria. So an example would be people who have loan payments that they have to meet, living expenses that they have to cover, those types of things. And you add those up, and let's just say, for example, you figure that you need at least a $35,000 income level, disposable cash income there to put towards those things. So that becomes a safety first criteria for you, that you must at least cover that much. So you put risk management strategies in place to make sure that you are able to do that. And in some cases, people will accept some risk there, so they'll make sure that they're able to do it, say, 90% certainty, if they will. In some cases, they don't accept any risk, and they want to make sure that they can do it for certain. Okay, and a lot of times, people in those categories will have one or two members of the family farm work off farm so that they have some stable income to cover those expenses. But that's a safety first strategy where you make sure that you cover some minimum level of income, and then after that, you evaluate whatever alternatives do that. You evaluate the remaining alternatives that meet that criteria according to something else, which could be minimize relative variation, it could be maximize expected value, and quite often it is to maximize expected value out of those. The last one is one that's a little more sophisticated, by nature. It has got a really cool name, though, if that's any consolation, and that is to mini-max regret. And there's been a lot of theory that started in the late 70s, early 80s by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky. And at that time, they called it prospect theory. A lot of other people have come to call it regret theory. And basically, it's the idea that people regret making the wrong choice. Okay, and in risk management, to up front, everybody needs to realize that you're going to quote unquote make the wrong choice a lot of times. And by that, I mean that you're going to make the decision because there's uncertainty still in place, and those uncertainties are going to come to pass, and you're going to wish you would have done something else. Okay, so the strategy to mini-max regret is that you try to minimize the maximum amount you might regret your decision. So people that use this strategy, a lot of people do, they tend to pick the middle of the road type of decision. So it might not always be, might not ever be the best, but they know it will never be the worst type of thing. And you hear them describing their decisions in this type of manner. So rather than maximize out their insurance, for example, they kind of pick the middle of the road on the insurance. Rather than try to time their marketing to hit the top of the market, they spread it out a little bit and know that, well, by spreading it out, some of these sales are definitely not going to be at the top of the market. But I know that they're not all going to be at the bottom of the market either. So those types of decisions that people make and then ultimately explain are explained by this mini-max regret type of strategy. So as we go forward and look at some of these things, it's important to realize what you are doing, and none of these are foolproof. They all have some employment and some places that make perfect sense, but they also have some cases where perhaps they don't make sense, and that just has to do with the distribution of outcomes that you're dealing with and the probabilities attached to them. So the next thing I'd like to talk about is distributions and probabilities, and I've used that term a lot, so I'll go ahead and put up a graph here, and we'll start look. And this is one of many graphs that we'll look at throughout this presentation, but this is a basic graph of a distribution of dice rolls, and this is two dice that are being rolled, and then the distribution or the probability that they occur is represented by the height of each of these outcomes. So on the extremes, then you have a dice down here at the bottom. There's only one way to roll a two, for example, and that's to roll snake eyes, two ones. Okay, so that has a very low probability of occurring. And if you actually count up all these different combinations of dice rolls throughout here, there's a total of 36 of them, because there's 6 times 6 different outcomes that can happen. So rolling a 2 only has a probability of 1 in 36 of occurring. Similarly, rolling double sixes only has a probability of 1 in 6 occurring, 36 occurring. And then in the middle here, there's a lot of ways we can get 7, okay? And if you count them, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different ways to roll 7. So that's 6 out of 36 ways, or probability of getting 7 on a double dice roll. So that's a 1/6 probability there. And that's the highest probability outcome that we can have in terms of the different numbers that you can roll with two dice. And then you see the other ones in between here. And this is what's called the normal probability distribution. A lot of times we assume this with things like prices and yields. Sometimes it's not so appropriate for yields, even though people do assume it sometimes over short time frames. But it's certainly something that can happen a lot with prices. For example, you can have a very average price over, say, a 5 or 10 year span, and you can have a very symmetric distribution around it on either side. That's above and below that average price. Okay, so we're going to talk about this in the context of several things throughout this presentation. But to begin with, I want you to convert your mindset, if you will, from just these generic dice rolls in the gambling setting into this being financial income. And in this case, I put the units here as $10,000. Okay, so instead of thinking a roll and a two, think of this as your financial income, okay, from your farming operation, and the probability that it could be one of these in the next year. So here on the top, in the very optimistic approach, this would be $120,000, okay? So here you are with $120,000, but it's only 1 in a 36 chance that it could occur. And here on the bottom end, you're looking at only $20,000, which may make you a little nervous in terms of your net income and having to cover those living expenses and whatnot throughout the year. Okay, but the most likely thing that could happen is that you're here in this $70,000 range and are very comfortable in terms of meeting those costs that you have, unless, of course, you have 4 kids in college or something like that that you have to break the bank for. So anyway, so get in the mindset that we're dealing here with dollars and outcomes coming along the horizontal axis, and we'll use this over and over this evening. And then the probability that they occur is the vertical measure here as we look at this, okay? So what we want to, in general, is have a lot of outcomes over here at the high end of these distributions, okay? So let's talk about this in the context of risk management then, okay? So here you are with general set of outcomes, and I've removed the labels here so we don't get hung up on it. And we say, okay, so I'm trying to make some risk management decisions, and in making those risk management decisions, I'm going to affect the shape of this distribution, which is, remember, this is your income down here, which is going to affect the probability of different levels of income. So what are you trying to do with your risk management decisions? Well, there are a couple of things right off the bat that are good things to try to accomplish with your decisions. And one of those is to push your income to a higher level. Okay, so this was our original one, the solid line. We make some decisions, and those decisions push our income to a higher level. So our average goes from X to Y. Okay, and let's just say this is a $2,000 push, and we think back to our screen earlier where we had the dice roll up there. Okay, so let's just say that we went from, actually, let's make it a $20,000 push. Okay, so we went from a $20,000 income down here on the bottom to now 40,000 is our bottom end, and on the top end we went from that 120,000 to 140,000. Okay, and our average went from 70,000 to 90,000. Okay, now what you did here, though, if you look at the shape of this, is we didn't change the relative spread of this distribution compared to what we had originally. So this is a good thing to have happen. So as a risk manager, sometimes you're not trying to quote stable your income, unquote. You're trying to increase your income on a regular basis without making it more unstable. And this is an example of that. So perhaps it's adding more inputs, more fertilizer, more seeds in the ground. Perhaps it's changing and planting a few acres to a different crop. Or perhaps it's on the marketing side. You're doing a little more specialized marketing of some sort. And are able to increase your income without taking on more risks. That's a good thing to have accomplished for you. Okay, so as a risk manager, that's one thing. Another thing that you might be trying to do is to stabilize your income without reducing the average result that you achieve. Okay, and so this would be a strategy, perhaps with the diversification of pricing or diversification of crops. Things like that you don't end up having to give up an average level of income, but you are able to do things to make it more stable. And this is primarily where people think about risk management, but this is only one of the two main ways that you could be trying to affect your level of income with your risk management decisions. Okay? Now, quite often in agriculture, you get a situation like this. And in this situation, you were able to lop off a big chunk of the bad outcomes that can happen to us. So you notice that this arrow right here signifying this movement from the dark solid line to the dotted line is much larger than this arrow up here on the top side, which signifies how much we have to give up on top end income. And the reason this happens a lot at agriculture has to do with things like crop insurance and government subsidies that are attached to that. So we're able, with crop insurance tools, to knock off a lot of the bad things that can happen to us, because crop insurance will kick in and pay us dollar for those losses below a certain level. And because it's being subsidized, our premiums are being subsidized, we have to pay relatively a smaller portion of that premium than we would normally to compensate the insurance companies for this payback here on the bottom end. Okay, so this is quite often the situation that happens in crop insurance. And we're going to look at those here right off the bat here with our risk simulation that we have for the Idaho barley farm. And that farm is called Mountain View Farms. And you can log in today, or you don't have to log in, I shouldn't say that. You can just go to our website, agsurvivor.com. Okay, and we have 12 different risk simulations up there for typical or ag settings throughout the country. We have some in the east part of the country, and a lot of them focused on Colorado and Wyoming, which is where most of our members are. But we have a couple for Utah, and we have this one here in particular for Idaho. And this is a Idaho Mountain View Farms dry land grain farming operation, and it's based in southeastern Idaho. The farm grows 500 acres of contracted malt barley. They grow 300 acres of feed barley and 1,200 acres of winter wheat. So 2,000 acres of crops and 100 head of beef cows that they have. So this simulation is up there. And if you want to read more details on the financials that you're dealing with and the story behind it, you can click documents. And we have a scenario guide that goes with it. We also have a couple of lesson guides, and one of those I'll walk through here in a little more detail today. But for right now, if you were to actually play this, you would just click the play button, and the scenario itself goes over 4 quarters per year for 2 years, so a total of 8 decision-making windows, if you will, or periods. And in those periods, you're making crop insurance decisions, you're making marketing decisions, et cetera. And then we computerize a simulation on yields and prices, and then you get to experience the outcome from that. But what I want to show you here today, we aren't going to work through the whole thing today, what I want to show you here today is the capstone at the end of this scenario, and that is when you get to the end of it, you can actually set your decisions up and have the scenario randomly draw 100 different sets of prices and yields and show you what your distribution would look like, okay? And this is the possible outcomes that could have occurred to you. And understand, when you play the simulation, you experience one of these. And this is not unlike real life, right? You have a lot of different things that could happen, and then you actually experience one of those things. So on this particular scenario, I just pulled up this one here where this person did absolutely nothing over here. If you look at their decisions, they didn't do any forward pricing. They didn't do any insurance. They did absolutely nothing. And if you do this on this particular scenario, these are the numbers that pop out. Okay, and this is a fairly risky approach, okay, and you can see that by the extremely wide spread that we have here between our minimum outcome and our maximum outcome, and keep in mind these are over 2 years, so this would be an average of $401,000 a year in gross income for this operation, and a minimum here of negative $27,000 total, or an average of about negative $13,500 per year for those 2 years. Okay, so you see a fairly wide spread there with this particular set of decisions because they didn't do anything from a risk management standpoint. Now, what a person can do, though, in this setting, and you can do this as you play it, is you can come here and you can start changing some of these. So we can click up here on the barley insurance, for example, and we can insure our barley at using yield protection at 75% coverage. And we can do the same thing for our wheat. And then we can drop down here into year two and duplicate those decisions for both barley and for wheat. And so we click on each of those and we insure our crops. And then we come on over here and we click recalculate. And when we click recalculate, it will redraw our graph for us. Okay, and it'll redo all of our numbers. So it went through the 100 different outcomes, and these are now the possibilities that can happen to us with these decisions in place. And this is an example of employing some risk management strategies, if you will, to change the possible outcomes. Okay, and so let's focus right here. First of all, we mentioned maximize the expected value or maximize the mean as a strategy. And you'll notice on this particular scenario with the insurance in place, our mean is 501,000. And if we compare that to our past one, when we didn't do anything, we had $515,000. Okay, so if we really wanted to maximize our long-term average, we wouldn't insure anything, right? According to these numbers right here, okay, we would just take our chances, and in the long run, we'd come out ahead because we weren't paying all those premiums. Okay, but of course, that's not why we buy crop insurance or don't buy crop insurance. We're looking at some bad things that can happen to us. And in this original one, we had a minimum here of a negative $27,000. Okay, and if we think of what would happen with crop insurance, okay, that minimum goes to $183,000. And you can get this picture just by looking at what happens to this shape here. Okay, we have a lot of things over here. This is a lot of thin stuff and a lot of big bulk right here, if you will. Okay, and not a lot up at the top end. Compare that to what we had when we didn't take out insurance. When we didn't take out insurance, we had all these bad things, bad years that happened to us when our crops failed, prices were low, and so on. And then we had a big bulk over here when things worked out perfectly and we weren't paying insurance premiums. Okay, so by taking out the insurance, what you're doing is you're squishing this up, you're making it more stable, okay, but at the same time, as we see from this mean here, we have to give up a little bit on average. And a lot of us would make that trade-off there, right? We went from possibility of losing, you know, fairly significant amount of money to really stabilizing a good solid income here by taking out crop insurance, okay? So if we were to maximize our minimum, we would definitely pick crop insurance here because this is a lot higher minimum than it was if we didn't do it. If we are optimist, of course, this number here, $750,000, incurs a lot of crop insurance premiums, so that's not going to be near as high as if we have great prices and great yields and no crop insurance premium. We can see that that jumps up about $52,000 there. Okay, so if we were maxi-max type of people, we wouldn't take out crop insurance. Now, what does crop insurance do for us in this case, or what does risk management decisions do for us when we employ them to actually achieve something? Well, they stabilize our outcome. So the standard deviation here, $184,000, that's a pretty big spread. Compare that to when we had crop insurance in place, that dropped down to $126,000. So this, with the insurance risk management pieces in place, this would minimize our variation over not having it in place. And then the relative one would be down here with the coefficient of variation, where we basically take the standard deviation and divide it by the mean. So it says how much did we get this stabilization factor compared to what we had to give up here on our mean value. And we know we had to give up something. We had to give up about $14,000 here on our mean. But we also know that we did a lot of stabilization. And if you look at that ratio, 0.253, that is much lower than what we had over here without crop insurance. So minimize that relative variation. We definitely want to put in crop insurance or some other risk management strategy to help us out there. Now, the last two that I mentioned a lot of people use are a little harder to pull out of this. Some people will use the 10th percentile for a safety first measure and say, you know, I need to accomplish a certain amount here. Some people will focus on them basically the minimum and say I need to make at least $60,000 over 2 years or $30,000 average, and that might be their criteria, in which case you would throw this one out. You wouldn't even consider it because it doesn't meet that criteria. The mini-max regret one, that we can actually proxy here by looking at our maximum and minimum. The most we will regret doing crop insurance is if we don't use it, and we can see from this 802 here, top end compared to this 750, that with this crop insurance in place and everything turns out honky-dory, we're going to regret, in this case, getting crop insurance $52,000 because it cost us $52,000 on the top end and we didn't get anything out of it. On the other hand, if we don't do crop insurance, and we look down here, right, we were $183,000 with crop insurance, and if you don't do crop insurance, you're at a negative $27,000. Well, that's a pretty big spread there of about $210,000. That's a lot of regret if you don't do it. So if you're a mini-max regret type of person, you're probably going to do some crop insurance because you'll regret it a lot if you have a crop failure. Okay, so those are the strategies employed here within the Mountain View Farm scenario. And, of course, some of us do this every day without really thinking about it. But it's nice to at least put some words to some of these strategies and have them moving forward. Okay, so let's get into this a little more numbers here in terms of researching insurance, barley insurance options. Okay, and I'm going to use the Mountain View Farm scenario, not necessarily from a standpoint of pulling up those graphs again, but from the numbers I use here as a representative farm. So let's start with the choices for barley insurance that are built into there. And there's two forms, yield protection, which, of course, just protects you on the yield side, and then revenue protection, which captures yield and price together. Those are offered, the revenue protection in particular is offered with or without harvest price exclusion. And I'll mention a few more words about that here in a moment if you don't know what that is. And all of these are offered also with or without option B endorsement for malt barley acres. And again, that's to something that I'll mention a few words about here in a moment. So if you look at all the different combinations that you can take out of this, in the Mountain View Farm scenario, there's actually six different insurance options that you can choose from. Okay, and then the seventh one, of course, would be to not insure at all. Okay, so keep moving along here with some basic information that we're dealing with in the scenario. We establish a current APH of 2,600 weight per acre for 500 acres of malt barley that's being planted. That would be 54 bushels to an acre if you're in a part of the country that is using bushels. 1,700 weight or 35 bushels to the acre for 300 acres of feed barley. So that's our established production history as far as insurance goes. Our insurance price levels, this would be for the feed barley, would be $9.25 a hundredweight or $4.44 a bushel. So that's built in there. The option B endorsement, which of course you can put on your malt barley acres, is going to add additional value to the price, if you will, for the malt barley. And in this particular scenario, we have malt barley contract starting off priced at $12 a hundredweight. So the option B endorsement adds $2.75 a hundredweight in insurance coverage for those malt barley acres. And if you're dealing with bushels, that would be $1.32 per bushel. And then the harvest price exclusion I mentioned, what that does is that locks in your insurance price level at the projected price at the time that you take it out. So that would be in the spring prior to March 15th for spring planted crops, or in the fall, it'd be before September 30th with the fall planted crops. So when you take out that insurance, you have that projected price put out there, and if you do harvest price exclusion, it locks that in for the revenue coverage. If you do not add the harvest price exclusion, you are able to get the higher of the projected price at the time you take the insurance out, or the harvest price that's calculated at the time that you harvest. And both of those are calculated and published for you. It's not necessarily what you receive for your crop. You go ahead and market your crop on your own. But it's a little bit confusion from a standpoint that if you add the harvest price exclusion, you're actually reducing your coverage, because for the insurance company, they know what the price is, and it's not going to go higher. And if you leave harvest price exclusion off, that's actually more coverage or more protection for you, because as prices go up between the time you take the insurance out and the harvest period, you get the higher of those two. You would get the harvest price if it went up. With that, that's a little bit confusion in there in terms of understanding that as it goes. In our example, we're going to actually not worry about harvest price exclusion and take that out of the mix. So we'll only have four different crop insurance things that we'll look at and analyze here. So let's suppose that you have a five-year history of malt barley production, and this is what it looks like. In year one, you had 1,100 weight per acre. In year two, 2,500 weight per acre. Year three, you had 34. Year four, 27. And year five, 33. Furthermore, in year one, none of those malt barley acres, the crop that you harvested there, none of them met the malting barley standard. So you had to sell it as feed barley. And in year four, only 60% met the standard. So 40% of that year's crop off the malt barley production history, you had to sell as feed barley. Okay, what a producer might do is they look at this, and we're trying to calculate probabilities and different decision-making stuff, is they might attach a 20% probability to having this very low yield per acre of $11 a hundredweight that we saw in year one, because it happened one out of 5 years. Okay, so they might go through and say, well, I have a 20% probability of having really low yields, and also 20% probability of that malt barley, none of it meeting malt barley standards according to that 1 year's worth of data there out of five. They might go through and group year two and year four together as kind of a mid-range yield and call that a medium yield outcome. And, of course, that happened twice in 5 years, which would be 40% of the time. And looking at 25 and 27, they might just fudge that and average it out to 2,600 weight per acre and call that a medium yield, and call that one possibility for the coming year. And then they would look at years three and five and say, well, those are high yield years, 70 bushels to the acre and 68 bushels to the acre, or 34 and 33 in 100 weights, and say that's another 40% probability that we have a high yield outcome. And we're just going to fudge that as a 3,400 weight per acre outcome. Okay, so they would look at these 5 years worth of data and say, well, there's three things that can happen. I can have a really low yield, and that happens 20% of the time, a medium yield, and that happens 40% of the time, or a really high yield, and that also happens 40% of the time. And furthermore, they can look at these malt barley standards and say, well, 20% of the time up there in year one, I'm going to not have any malt barley meet the standards. And in another 20% of the time, I'm going to have only 60% meet the standards. So each of these has a 20% chance of occurring that I'm going to have some malt barley quality issues crop up. Okay, so they just look at the last 5 years worth of data and they start attaching some probabilities to some possible outcomes. And if you wanted to, you could put it in a chart that perhaps looked like this. Again, we look at our yields as being either low yields, high yields, or low yields, high yields, or medium yields, okay, with the low happening 20%, high happening 40%, and medium happening 40%. Here's the malt barley yields that I attached to that with our earlier numbers that we had, 11, 26, and 34. If we correspond that over here into our feed barley yields, and we're going to also look at crop insurance decisions for those feed barley acres, that would be 7, 17, and 22. And these are our actual outcomes, and you can see this met pretty good here in corresponding years for the feed barley. This year, we just averaged 16 and 18 to get 17. Okay, so we're looking at those of our possible yield outcomes. We also have attached to that possible price outcomes. Okay, and these are independent necessarily of the actual yields. We're assuming that our production doesn't necessarily influence prices. And we qualify high prices as $10.50 a hundredweight or $5.04 per bushel. We qualify medium prices as $9.25 a hundredweight or $4.44 per bushel. And we're going to qualify low prices as $6 per hundredweight or $2.88 per bushel. Okay, so if we couple these three different price possibilities with the three different yield possibilities, that's 3 times 3, that would give us 9 different possible outcomes. And then, of course, on that medium yield outcome, there's a 50% chance there, if you will, that we will have a malt quality issue. Okay, so there's a yes, no on the malt quality issue if we have a medium yield. So that doubles, that gives us another 3 possibilities. So if you enumerate all of these and look at all the different things that we've just said that could possibly happen in our simplified setting here, we come up with 12 different possible outcomes. And we can put those in a chart and start running some numbers. So, for example, our 3 outcomes associated with really high yields, okay? We have high yields right here and 34 on the malt barley and 22 hundredweight per acre on the feed barley. Those happen, that high yield situation happens 40% of the time. And when each one of those, okay, if that happens, there's a possibility of having high price, medium price, or low price. Okay, so that gives us a combination here of a total of 3 different things happening. Each of those has equal probability of 33%. Okay, and this would be just our feed barley acres, what they would come out to. That's just multiplying feed barley yield times this price. So this would be what we get per acre for our feed barley. If we had high yield outcomes, we had no malt barley loss issues. And so if we couple in the malt barley revenue and average over all 800 acres, these would be the possible outcomes. Okay, and they differ only because different price outcomes here. Okay, now total up, this happens 40% of the time over here that we have this, and so that's covered here. So each of these happens with the price outcomes evenly, so that's 13.3, 13.3, and 13.3% of the time. Okay, so we can do this for each of them. The only one that's a little bit tricky here is this middle outcome, right? Because we got to split that. Again, it's 40% of the time. You have high, medium, and low prices each case, but we have to split it because sometimes we have malt barley losses, and sometimes we don't have malt barley losses, and sometimes we do. And if we do, that's going to reduce our income over here on the average revenue per acre over the full 800 acres. It doesn't have any impact on the feed barley acres. You see, they just repeat themselves. But when we add in the malt barley issue, if we don't have any malt barley quality issues, we get $261.94 per acre average over 800 acres. If we do, remember we have it on 40% of the acres, we only get $252 average per acre. Okay, so we get a lower income when we add in those malt barley acres half the time with this medium yield outcome based off the fact that we have some quality issues. Okay, so again, this 40% spread out of all those possibilities is 6.7% for any one of these occurring. Okay, And then the low yield down here, 11 and 7. And again, we don't have any malt barley come off of that. So only difference between the feed barley outcome per acre and then adding in the malt barley is that the malt barley is expected to yield 4 more hundredweight per acre. Okay, but they're all going to get this same price here. None of this malt barley acreage is going to get the malt barley price of $12 a hundredweight. So you can actually number all of these out and look at all the different possibilities. Okay, the worst we can come to is 57. The best is 341 per acre. Now, these aren't exactly in order because we have this kind of mishmash happening here in the middle with our medium yields based off of whether the malt barley quality is an issue or not. But we can take those same numbers, okay, and put them in order, and this is what they look like from lowest revenue per acre to highest revenue per acre and the probability that they occur, okay? And so you can actually put this in a distribution like we saw before in Mountain View Farms, and it's not very interesting because you see these here are all 7%, and then the high ends are all 13%. I personally don't find those type of distributions a whole lot of fun to look at. They don't tell you a lot of information in terms of decision making. What I prefer to use is what's called a cumulative probability distribution, and that's what we see right here. This is just adding these things up, and this is what it looks like graphically. Okay, and the intuition is the same in terms of the endpoints. This is the worst thing that can happen to us, and that's $57 per acre in revenue over the 80 acres, and we see that happening right up here, okay, and there's a 7% probability that will occur, okay, and the other extreme is up here at the top, and that's what we see down here with $341 an acre, okay, and that's what occurs right there. But what it does across here is it accumulates the probabilities of things occurring, okay, as you go across. So, for example, if we look at this 20% right here, that's accumulating everything from 99, 75, and below. So if we come over here, that's approximately 100. We come up right here. That would tell us that we have about a 20% probability of having $100 per acre or less in revenue. Okay, and you'd see some other milestones that come out here evenly. The 40% milestone occurs at $236, so that would be this point right here. Okay, so this graphically would tell you that you have a 40% probability of being below $236 an acre, and of course that would leave a 60% probability of being above that threshold. And we see another one here at 60%, it's at $261. Okay, so you can start to see here the probability of falling below a certain threshold. So if you're familiar with your cost of production, this can be very handy in terms of the insurance product that you want to take out, or perhaps even pricing issues that might occur in terms of being locking in some forward contracts and whatnot and taking some of the price volatility out of this picture. Okay. So how does this relate then back to some of the graphs that I had up here earlier in terms of probability distributions? And I mentioned you might be trying to do something like this with your risk management decisions, that is eliminate some of these bad things and not give up too much on the top side. What does that look like in that cumulative probability distribution that I had up here? And you say, well, what am I trying to do to this thing? Okay, how do I want it to look? Okay, well, it's the same type of idea, and you think about that, getting rid of bad things, pushing the bottom end over to the right without giving up too much on the top end. The way that looks like in a cumulative distribution is something like this. Okay, so if this area is where you started out with the solid line, you're trying to do risk management decisions that get rid of some of these bad outcomes and push the bottom end over to the right without giving up too much on the top end. Okay, so you don't want this top end to be too much back to the left. Okay, so in a cumulative distribution, more stable means it's steeper. Okay, and again, you're trying to push it to the right if possible, which means you're making more money or your outcomes are better. Okay, so that's some of what we might try to do with those results that we saw in that previous chart by employing some risk management tools. And some of those tools, the two big ones, of course, with crop producers, are marketing tools or crop insurance. And we're going to focus on crop insurance here tonight and look at some things that you might want to consider as you look at your crop insurance decision this year or even beyond. So this was our original table of outcomes that we had, and we had this big wide range of possible income per acre or revenue per acre based off of all these different unknowns over here in terms of what we might get for prices and yields. Okay, so what does this look like in terms of the crop insurance possibilities? Well, we can take these same numbers, okay, and we can look at those crop insurance choices that we have built into the simulation. And the first one would be yield protection at 75. That's the one I clicked on that initial distribution in Mountain View Farms. Okay, and of course, this is going to pay if your yield drops below 75% of your APH. Okay, so if you keep in mind, we just happened coincidentally, as this worked out here, for our malt barley yield to be at 26, which is our APH, and our feed barley yield to be at 17, which is our APH for the feed barley acres. So any of these first nine outcomes, okay, all of these yields are at or above APH, so certainly none of them are below 75%. So the only time this insurance products will pay you back an indemnity is in those dry years when your yield drops to 11 in the malt barley and 7 in the feed barley. And when it does that, it's going to pay you roughly an average of $69 an acre over the 800 acres, okay, of your total barley acreage. Okay, so this will be split up between paying you back for your malt barley yield loss and paying you back for your feed barley yield loss at that $9.25 a hundredweight that was the projected price at the time you took this out. Okay, so it's only going to pay off here. It's going to pay off at $69 an acre, and these here would total up, be right in that 20% range, because that's how often we're going to have this low yield. Okay, and our average cost per acre for this insurance product would be just under $12 an acre. Okay, so you could do the math here if you want and take 20% times the 69. This would total out to about $14 an acre on average over the long haul, and you're paying $11 for a premium. Okay, so that's the way that particular product would work out. If you added option B, okay, that's when your malt barley doesn't meet malt barley quality. Okay, you're going to get a boost down here as far as indemnity goes when you have very low production, because remember, none of the malt barley acres met the malt barley standard. So you're going to get paid back that $2.75 a hundredweight for those malt barley yields, okay, that didn't meet the standards. And that's what you see depicted right here, from going $69 to $91 an acre on average, is getting paid back for that option B endorsement. You're also going to get a little bit down here when you have the malt barley issues. Remember, that would happen on 40% of your malt barley acres. So you're going to get a little bit of boost there. Okay, and keep in mind, this is an average over all 800 acres, right? So only 40% of those 500 acres of malt barley actually got paid back, or actually received an indemnity for not meeting quality standards. And then when you distribute it over all 800 acres, it works out about $6.70 an acre. Okay, so you can see how that indemnity would come back to you. Okay, it's a little higher protection, so it's going to pay you back more often and a little bit more. Okay, but it's also going to cost you more. So you go from about $12 an acre to $14.62 an acre for that coverage. And then over here on the revenue protection side, so we're moving up, and now we're covering both price and yield. Revenue protection at 75 was our third option. Okay. And so that, again, is going to pay down here at the bottom when you have really bad yields. It doesn't matter what the price is, you're going to get something back. But unlike when you just had yield protection, you actually get more back with the lower prices. Okay, so you see that extra protection kicking in there. Okay, so instead of these being locked in at 69 with $9.25, okay, that $10.50, okay, that's not going to help you out much, but this here is going to help you out with the $6. You're going to get a big boost there in terms of extra indemnity payments coming your way. Now, you're not happy with that, because you'd much rather have good prices here and good yields up in the top end of this distribution. But, you know, it gives you some comfort there, knowing that you're going to get paid back almost $100 an acre in indemnity to help alleviate some of those losses. It also is going to pay a small indemnity here when you have medium yields, okay, and very low prices at $6, and that's because of it's a revenue product, and that low price drops below your revenue threshold guarantee of 75% of expected. So you can see how this one pays back, okay, and again, it's higher protection, so it costs a little bit more than what we've seen so far. So another about 85 cents an acre more to go up the revenue coverage versus the yield protection with option B, and you can see quite a bit of boost going from just straight yield protection to straight revenue protection at 75%. And then the last one is the most comprehensive because it's that revenue protection along with option B. So we see some of these things kick in. Okay, we see the $21 an acre indemnity payment coming in here for the low prices. We see the $6.70 kicking in here for the fact that your malt barley didn't all make malt barley there. And then we see the numbers cropping up down here. Okay, this one here gets both of those, the $6.70 and the $21.21. Because it's got low prices and malt barley quality issues. And then the highest payoff from insurance coming from really low yields and really bad malt barley. And so we get kicked back some pretty high indemnities there up to $122 an acre. But, of course, this is the highest level coverage, okay? So it's the highest expense in terms of that premium that you pay. So this is the way crop insurance works. Now, it doesn't always, these numbers don't come out the same. These are just numbers pulled out of our simulation. You would have your own numbers to plug in here. But the general idea is as you pay for more coverage, okay, as these indemnity or premiums go up, you're paying for more coverage, and you can and collect more in indemnities further back into the process so that things don't have to be as horrible as they are right here before you collect with a very basic yield policy. Okay? So what a person can do is look back at all these 12 different possibilities that we had for revenue on our earlier chart. They can look at all of these indemnities coming back minus the premiums that would have cost you to get that coverage, if you will, and they can net it out, okay, and see what it looks like overall. So you could take this indemnity minus this premium here of almost $12 an acre, and you get a net from your insurance, and then you add that net back to the revenues that we had in the previous chart without insurance considered. And what you can produce is what's called a payoff matrix, and this would be the payoff matrix for each of those insurance options that we mentioned, and plus I went ahead and reiterated the none option that we started with here, and then all 12 outcomes that we discussed that could possibly occur, okay? The high yield, high price outcome up here, and then the medium price and low price. 4 through 9 would be the medium yields with and without malt barley issues and so on and so forth. So this is just combining all of those previous charts, and we see, you know, the best outcomes along the top here, high yield, high prices. And, of course, if that occurs, you know, you're just wasting your money on the insurance, right, in terms of that final outcome. So, you know, if you knew you were going to get high prices and knew you were going to get high yields, none of us would insure, and we'd just take this $341 an acre to the bank and be really happy. We wouldn't pay those premiums because those premiums are reducing these net income per acre, okay? But they're reducing that on the top end in exchange for giving us protection on the bottom end down here, okay? And we saw that we started off with a $57 per acre if we didn't insure at all. Okay, and then if we net these other ones out, you can see the protections kick in. On the low end, the protection just with yield protection at 75%, you know, it pretty much doubled that worst outcome up to $114 an acre, okay, which might be something that we can live with. And, of course, as we increase our premiums and increase our coverage levels, we increase this minimum value all the way up to the revenue protection at 75 and option B giving us a minimum yield of 161, or minimum revenue of $161 an acre net, even with all those yield losses and with no malt barley to actually sell at the malt barley prices. We're collecting that indemnity on the option B. You'll also note down here on the bottom the expected value of these. This would be the average, weighted average of all these possible outcomes. There's not a lot of difference between them, okay? Not a lot of difference between them overall. A little bit in terms of the numbers that I happen to put in here, but I wouldn't put any weight in these in terms of these being different because I happen to pick, you know, very lumpy levels of yields and lumpy prices and so on and so forth. So they're pretty much equivalent in terms of how they work out on average, but you can see how they operate here. You got that upfront premium involved, which is going to pull this top end down further, but it gives you more protection on the bottom, okay? None of these are going to exceed the expected value if you don't insure at all in this particular case. It's not always the case, but in this particular case, it's that way because you're taking a lot more risk over here on the right-hand side by not doing the insurance, and you get a little bit of reward for that by not having that premium taken out of all of these values that you see in the overall distribution, okay? So let's finish up by going and looking at how these would look on our charts, okay, because we can chart these. And if you think back to our original one when we didn't have any insurance, right, we had 57 down here on the low end, and I believe this was 341 up here at the top end on our chart. So with that in mind, what does it look like if we start comparing this to what we get for a chart with our insurance policies in place? And I think you'll see some of the effects that we talked about before. So let's start with the yield protection. And if you do yield protection at 75, we have to give up a little bit on the top end here, as we see. Okay, we're to the left of that, a little less income up at the top end. But look at all this protection we got at the bottom end. We essentially doubled that, going from $57 to $114 an acre. Okay, so we see this red line through here depicting a little more steepness, a lot more stable income. Okay, and most importantly, the protection that it provided down here on the bottom end. Okay, so that's how you would compare them. And right here, you'd see where the crossover is as we move from that very low yield environment, remember, where we just don't do well at all, up to higher yield environments where we're not going to be able to collect insurance off of the yield protection and be stuck with the premium. Okay, but we can see how that works. Now, as you move along and buy more protection, okay, yield protection at 75 along with option B, again, we move the tail in a smidge. Okay, it gets a little steeper, and we have to give up just a little bit up here, and that's just the difference in our premium prices that we see occurring up here on the top end. As we continue to go through this, we go to revenue protection, and with revenue protection, okay, because we're doing both price and yield here, we see some of the floor, if you will, kick in that we saw earlier on those charts. That was a 141, I believe, was this cutoff right here, okay? So because we have that in place, even as price drops at that low-yield environment, we're paid back for that revenue drop dollar for dollar, so we end up with a nice floor occurring there, and we know that's as low as that can possibly go at $141.49, as it turns out. So that cuts that off, and in order to do that, we see the exchange that this is just slightly to the left of the others, because I had that about 85 cent higher premium than if we did yield protection with option B. And then the last one was the highest level of protection, and that was the revenue protection at 75 with option B in place. And when you do that, of course, that pushes that floor up to the $161 an acre that we had with that coverage. Okay, again, the difference here being the option B coverage kicking in and paying you option B indemnities, if you will, when you had those low yield outcomes and your malt barley didn't make malt. So this provides the most protection on the bottom end. Of course, as you go up the chart here, it's going to be slightly to the left of the other ones because you're going to pay slightly more premium up at the top end. Okay, so that's the way that would work. So as a risk manager, you saw what it looked like in the charts. Did you look at the, I guess I'll call them charts, but the tables that we had with the numbers in there. Okay, but this is how it would look like in a chart. If you were to graph those out, and this is the type of things that you're trying to do as a risk manager, that is to bring up that bottom and make things more stable without having to give up too much on the top end, if at all possible. Okay, and of course, if you can adopt some sort of technology boost, sometimes you can push this whole thing to the right and actually make more money in a lot more stable environment, and that usually is some sort of fairly revolutionary technology advance that comes through the pipe. And sometimes it's something like a herbicide, sometimes it's, in the livestock industry, it might be some sort of feed additive or vaccination type of thing that comes through and really boosts production and makes it more stable and consistent. But for the most part, with insurance products and with pricing tools that you might have, this is the type of effect that you'll have. You'll be able to bring up that bottom end so you don't ever hit the low end and you have to give up a little bit on the top end in order to accomplish that. So we're moving down towards the end, but I wanted to revisit our graphic distribution from our Mountain View Farm scenario, and this is the last one that we had up after we put the insurance in place for both barley and wheat with yield protection at 75, okay? And I wanted to show you this because as you start to buy up insurance, you might say, well, what does it look like on this chart? You know, how does it act within your scenario? So what I did here, I didn't change the wheat insurance, but I went from yield protection on the barley insurance all the way up to that top level that we saw with that earlier data of revenue protection at 75% plus option B in place. So this would be the highest level protection that we had in terms of insurance. Of course, it's going to also have attached to it the highest level of premium. Okay, and when you do that, okay, what do you expect to have happen? You expect to have this take care of some more things on the bad end, okay? And in exchange for having to give up a little bit more on the top end, so you expect this distribution to push itself in together. And in fact, that's what it did. Okay, if we look at the bottom end here, our worst revenue is just under $196,000, okay? Much better than the worst revenue with less insurance coverage at $183,000. We see that higher level of coverage because now we have revenue versus just yield, and now we have option B in. So we see the difference in that number, and we also see the difference on the chart as some of these get pushed over to the right, some of these poor outcomes. But what do we have to give up? We have to give up a little bit on the top. Here we're only at $740,000 on the top end. Okay, here we are at $750,000, the difference being that now we're paying, here we had lower premiums, if you will, because we just did yield protection, and when we bumped up to that higher level of protection, of course, we paid about $10,000 more in premiums, and it's reflected here on the maximum. And it's also reflected here on the chart, okay, because we lose some of these high-end outcomes. On average, $495,000, okay, versus $501,000. So again, like we had before, if you're trying to maximize your expected value, you might do less insurance, okay? But by doing that, you're taking on more risk, and that's reflected over here in the standard deviation, 126 versus a lower standard deviation of 121, okay? How do those trade off? How does this trade off 121 divided by this mean? Gives us a relative coefficient of a relative variation or a coefficient of variation of 0.245. This is for the higher level of insurance, okay, versus this coefficient of variation of 0.253, okay, which is a higher number with less insurance in place. Okay, so one person might look at that and say, well, okay, so we had to give up some in the mean when we went from 501 down to 495, but we were also able to do some equivalent adjustment here in our standard deviation in terms of the ratio. We actually were able to improve that relative variation and make it smaller by buying up on insurance. So somebody might look at that and make that decision. And the last thing I'd point out here on this is this $344,000 10th percentile. Oops, I went the wrong direction here. Let me go back. Okay, and we see that represented a boost from $336,000. So you see that $8,000 boost there on the 10th percentile, which means that 90% of the time we made more than this amount. Okay, so we pushed everything up on the bottom end, okay, in terms of our minimum got pushed up and our 10th percentile got pushed up, and and we're able to reflect that with more insurance here, okay. So if we had not done this insurance buy up here compared to the old one, we would regret it by $12,000, okay. So you would In the worst case scenario, on the minimum side. On the top side, we regret it buying up insurance if we didn't need it by $10,000. So that mini max regret decision choice would be to go ahead and buy up the insurance in this case. Okay. So hopefully this has given you some things to think about as you make your insurance decisions, that you're trading off things to stabilize your income. You'd certainly like to improve it, but that's not going to come about just by buying insurance necessarily. You're probably going to have to do something else on the production side. But as you stabilize your income and bring these things, eliminate some of these bad things that can happen or push them a little further up the chain with insurance products or with different pricing strategies, et cetera, you're also giving up a little bit on the top, but your strategy is to hopefully not give up too much on the top as you make those choices. Okay, so I'm going to close with some what I would I guess, classify as take-home points, and that is to encourage all of you to not just think of this year's outcome or last year's outcome. Don't think of them as just one thing that can happen. Think in terms of probabilities of a lot of different things that can happen. So think in terms of those distributions and those charts that I had up there. Identify your strategies and things that you'd like to do to those different outcomes and probabilities that are out there. So when you look at that distribution, how comfortable are you with the bottom end of those things, the bottom end possibilities and the likelihood of them occurring, and can you do anything to change that picture, if you will, to push those incomes higher or maybe reduce those probabilities that those bad things happen? And what do you have to give up on the top end to make that happen? And is that a trade-off that you want to make? So when evaluate the tools available, given the best information available. You don't know what the prices are going to be. You don't know what the weather's going to be and if your yield's going to be good or bad. You have some past data to work off. You also have information moving forward, whether it be looking at drought climate center or just looking at your local soil conditions, going out and looking at your field and seeing what the moisture's like and so on and so forth. So you have some information there to work with. It's not going to be perfect. You're not going to know exactly what's going to happen, but you gather as much information as you can available and use the tools you have available, like crop insurance or perhaps pricing things if you're looking at market risk. To try to have the effect on these distributions or these probabilities and outcomes that you face that you want to have on it. So protection against downside risk will cost you. Generally, getting rid of those bad things in the bottom end is not going to be for free. You're going to have to give up something, whether it be an insurance premium or whether it be giving up some possible high prices by timing the market just right. You generally have to give up something. The question is, what are you comfortable doing? What probabilities and outcomes look best for you to experience in the future? So when you're making these choices, these risk management choices, whether it be crop insurance, marketing, or just what to plant, all kinds of different things that might come into play there on the input side, even labor questions, those types of things. The question is what are you comfortable doing? What looks best for you in terms of that distribution and the probabilities of outcomes that you might experience? Don't get caught up in thinking that you're picking the actual outcome, because the actual outcome is going to be picked for you by Mother Nature and by market influences that are beyond your control. So just concentrate on all the different possibilities and the effect that you can make on either eliminating some of those possibilities or moving some of them to a better position. So with that, I am going to go ahead and wrap up, and I really appreciate anybody for joining us here today live, and for those of you in the future that are viewing this as a recording. If anybody has questions, I welcome those now. You can find me on the web on our Right Risk website if you ever want to get a hold of me and ask me about anything that I presented here today or any of the Right Risk tools that we have available. So I believe Kelly's back on, and Kelly.
Thank you, Jay. Really appreciate a very informational webinar. I don't see any questions, so this will conclude the webinar today on evaluating risk management options for Idaho barley producers. We hope to see Jay Parsons back in the state of Idaho here sometime in the future. We appreciate his work on the Right Risk Project. Thank you for joining us today. And again, if you want more information or a link to these recorded webinars, please visit our website at www.barley.idaho.gov. Goodbye.